Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
And I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
Charlie, we have new Taylor Swift, a brand new record, The Tortured Poets Department.
The anthology, a two-disc, two-hour-long album. Yeah.
Right. This is not just an album. It's a double album. It's an anthology. It's 16 tracks and then another 15 tracks.
Yeah.
And if I had to pick one thing to kind of sum up this massive, sprawling anthology, it's this. On this album, we find Taylor Swift in her literary era.
What do you mean?
Let's go right to this title song, Charlie. Tortured Poets Department. I laughed in your face and said, you're not Dylan Thomas. I'm not Patti Smith. This ain't the Chelsea Hotel. We're modern idiots. I laughed in your face and said, you're not Dylan Thomas. I'm not Patti Smith. This ain't the Chelsea Hotel. We're modern idiots.
So comparing herself to famous poets and songwriters, but also almost using it as a foil to say, I'm not them.
Right, right. I realize I'm playing this excerpt, which defies the thesis that I just laid out at the top of this. This is Taylor Swift saying, I'm not Dylan Thomas. I'm not Patti Smith. And yet I think she protests too much.
Ooh,
Charlie,
she doth protest.
Dylan Thomas, do not go gentle to that night. Patti Smith, you said you described her as a musician, but she's also a writer, a memoirist. You know, the Chelsea Hotel, a famous New York institution where many literary luminaries stayed.
Right, right, right.
And I think despite this sort of tongue-in-cheek jab at herself as a modern idiot, I do think this is her aspiration, is to be one of these literary luminaries. I think, Charlie, she is the tortured poet.
Oh, she's the tortured poet.
She is the tortured poet.
She is the professor in the manuscript. Big reveal. Sorry, spoilers. The final song on the album is called The Manuscript. She talks about a professor, maybe an allusion to the famous character played by Robin Williams in The Dead Poets Society. And the years passed like scenes of a show. The professor said to write what you know. Backwards might be the only way to move forward. So she's taking on this professorial writer character.
Well, unlike Taylor Swift, Charlie, you have no literary bent. You just gave away the ending before we even got to the beginning. But let me try and salvage this.
Okay.
Why is literature important to Taylor Swift? I think we get maybe some insight into that in the song I Hate It Here. I hate it here, so I will go to secret gardens in my mind. People need a key to get to. The only one is mine. I read about it in a book when I was a precocious child. No mid-sized city hopes and small town fears. We'll go to secret gardens in my mind. People need a key to get to. The only one is mine. I read about it in a book when I was a precocious child. Perhaps the power of words is the power to transport you somewhere other than where you are.
Right.
To somewhere safe, somewhere comforting, somewhere that only you know. I don't know, but I can imagine being one of the most scrutinized people on planet Earth, that being able to retreat to a fortress of words could be a very necessary and sort of self-sustaining process. And I feel like in many ways, that's what's being celebrated throughout this album. Mm. People will tell you otherwise, Charlie. People will say, no, the song is about this figure in her life, this friend, this lover. And perhaps that's true to a degree as well. But I actually think it's the power of fiction that is what's being celebrated here.
Okay, so you're saying she has entered her literary era.
Yes. I mean, I don't know if the next tour is going to be her in a massive arena at like a writing desk with a quill and a parchment or something. I can't speak to the sort of stage spectacle of how this will play out. But I think as you go through this album, Tortured Poets, anthology, Tortured Poets Department. That's a very poetic term in itself, Charlie.
Right, anthology. Yeah.
We find almost different literary genres that she's playing with. And these will range from, I think, very well-established ones to ones that are totally her own. So if you're persuaded by this literary era theory, maybe we can run through some of the different literary genres that appear throughout this massive, sprawling 2-hour-plus opus.
I really hope that we get some young adult sci-fi.
Well, there, you joke, and yet I feel like some lunar landscapes of the mind might unveil themselves as we go through.
Okay, I'm excited. Where do we start?
There's so much going on here. We won't be able to cover it all, but I want to start with my favorite genre, the genre that speaks to me.
What's that?
The genre that I grew up with, because my dad is a novelist and he wrote 3 incredible detective novels. I'm talking about
the noir
pulp, Charlie. I'm talking about exactly noir pulp crime.
Yeah,
the shady side of life, you know.
There's some really good ones here, kind of also in the style of like country murder ballads. So what should we listen to?
Well, maybe we start with Fresh Out the Slammer. This sounds like something that a hard-boiled detective in the 50s would utter while, like, you know, inhaling a unfiltered Marlboro Red or something.
Yeah. Let's hear it. Okay, a blend of some kind of crime story plus romance. Once I get out of prison, I know who I'm going to call.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, I think it's easy to read the song as a metaphor for for exiting a destructive relationship and entering a more hopeful new one. I think that's what this, you know, central metaphor of leaving prison is about.
Okay.
But the way it's delivered, I mean, Fresh Out the Slammer, again, this sounds like something that, you know, a Dick Tracy criminal would say.
Fresh Out the Slammer.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the, like, the biggest pop star of our era using it. I think one thing I like about this album is that Swift is kind of unafraid to play with these cliches and these literary tropes and try to infuse them with some kind of new meaning.
Yeah, I hear that.
And I feel like on this song that message is supported by a guitar tone that is full of kind of almost cartoonish bluster and like old West showdown kind of terror.
It's like a spaghetti Western.
Totally. You're a resident guitarist. What's going? What's producing that kind of twangy, tone?
Old style single coil guitar, probably a Telecaster associated with country, playing really close to the bridge, so it gets really bright and twangy, and then through a reverberant guitar amp with a lot of spring reverb and tremolo, which gives it that whoa 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 kind of effect.
The credits tell us that former Switched on Pop guest Jack Antonoff is the guitar player on this.
Yeah.
So I like to think of him sort of imagining, in maybe a discussion with Taylor Swift, like, what does this song need? It needs this atmospheric guitar that'll really set the scene. Again, it's pulp. It's exaggerated. It's playful. Mm-hmm. But it also might have a deeper meaning.
Well, while we're talking about crime novels,
yeah,
can we talk about the other most ridiculous title on the album, Florida?
Florida! Exclamation point! Exclamation point! Exclamation point! Exclamation point!
Little did you know your home's really only a town you're just a guest in. So you work your life away just to pay for a timeshare down in Destin. Florida is one hell of a drug.
Florida is an amazing place in the popular imagination. It's the place where the Florida man is, who commits all kinds of bizarre crimes and mishaps. It's the place that endless people go for saving money on their taxes when they retire. And of course, it's a destination vacation land where the governor is in a constant culture war with Disney. Florida is everything.
A literal and figurative swamp.
No shade to the people of Florida.
I'm glad you thought of this song too, Charlie, because to me, this is the other pulpy moment on the album. And actually, these two songs are right next to each other, Fresh Out the Slammer and Florida, ! And we get some really pulpy, evocative language when we get to the third verse of this track.
I did my best to lay to rest all of the bodies that have ever been on my body and in my mind. They sink into the swamp. Is that a bad thing to say in a song?
Okay, so we have the wonderful Florence Welch duet with Taylor Swift. Florence actually introduces her verse earlier with "the hurricane with my name when it came," which is great because there was a famous hurricane, Florence. I know, right? Which, of course, Florida is the place where hurricanes hit. Yeah, it's very good. She's singing about laying bodies to rest that have been on her body and putting them into the swamp. And so, again, maybe a metaphor about relationships, but using the framework of crime.
First of all, the blend of Taylor Swift and Florence Welch's voice on this track is like one of the best things on this whole anthology to me. I love hearing Taylor sort of very, very controlled and almost like vibrato-less timbre with Florence Welch's much more kind of dramatic and sweeping and expressive and heavily vibratoed timbre. The way those two kind of play off against each other works really well for this song because they're almost like accomplices or something. And you can, it's like maybe like a Thelma and Louise kind of vibe. You know, they're very different, but they're allied in this common mission to sink the bodies in a swamp. Also, maybe shades of No Body, No Crime from Evermore.
Yeah, with the Heim sisters.
Another murder ballad.
Right. Yet another read of this is that it's impossible for me not to summon the images of illegal presidential documents being hidden in Florida.
Tell me I'm despicable, say it's unforgivable. It's the dolls are beautiful.
Which is maybe absurd, but there is another song on the album where she talks about a famous spray-tanned person. Most certainly it's about her beef with Kim Kardashian, but you could imagine a spray-tan politician who Taylor has had trouble criticizing in the past.
There's a bronze spray-tan statue of you.
My friend Abby has a theory that all of the album Lover was about the former president. We don't need to go down that rabbit hole, but it does bring up this image of like, there's a lot of people who commit serious crimes in Florida.
Well, you know, ultimately we hear what we want to hear in these Taylor Swift songs.
True.
And I mean, and she acknowledges that, you know, on Mirror Ball, for instance, on an earlier album. We see what we want to see in these songs.
Oh, that's cool. You know, on the song Who's Afraid of Little Old Me, she says something very similar to Mirror Ball.
Putting narcotics into all of my songs. And that's why you're still singing along.
We're all just hallucinating whatever it is that we want to see in her music.
Okay, moving from the literary genre of hard-boiled pulp novels, I feel like we can
turn the page.
I like what you did there. To the world of the teenage diary entry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I say this in part because Swift herself has sort of referenced this in a speech accepting a songwriting award. She described how she sees herself as using different pens to write different songs. And one of the pens she uses is this colorful gel pen mm-hmm. that is maybe the pen that she uses when she's like accessing her own childhood and mm-hmm. and her own inner kid, I guess. And I feel like we hear that gel pen on a couple of these songs. For instance, Down Bad.
Now I'm down bad, crying at the gym. Everything comes out, teenage petulance. Fuck it if I can't have him. I might just die, it would make no difference. Down bad.
This is a great example of some kind of musical transference between her and her younger fans. Swift is known to have been practicing for this giant Eras tour that she's been embarking mm-hmm. on by running yeah. on the treadmill, singing her songs, because that's basically what it is to be on stage doing all these dance moves and singing. And yeah. so using this image of running at the gym.
Crying at the gym, actually.
Crying at the gym while on the yeah. treadmill with this sort of teenage petulance, which is such a...
Yeah.
That sings really well. Teenage petulance. I like that.
I cry at the gym, but for very different reasons. Just because I'm at the gym and that depresses me.
And so for her, it's a very specific place that she might be writing from with her own gel pen. But I think for any teenager who might be in high school, they might have that same feeling of like being at the gym and that person who they're really in love with is over there doing the weights and they're not paying attention to them. And they're
I feel like that's the kind of teenage petulance that she's accessing in
totally,
this song.
Yeah.
So it's very appropriate. You mentioned high school.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that means we should listen to another one of these diaristic literary songs from the anthology. And appropriately, it's So High School.
I've never heard Aristotle and Grand Theft Auto in the same line. That's a great rhyme.
That's a good stanza.
That is so high school, right? You're supposed to be reading your Aristotle, but actually you're playing Grand Theft Auto.
Not to mention Spin the Bottle. So it's like, I mean, these five lines are like a tour through all of the highs and lows of that sort of high school experience.
Mm-hmm. That's really funny. And if you're going to reference a franchise, I guess Grand Theft Auto is appropriate because it is one of those video game franchises from like 20 years ago that still exists today. So it will speak to multiple generations.
Yeah. Where are you on that divide, Charlie? Are you on that side of Aristotle?
Oh, I was
Grand Theft Auto or Spin the Bottle. Those are your three. Those are basically the three kinds of people you can be in high school.
I mean, it's embarrassing. You know which one. Aristotle. I did my homework. Wasn't spinning the bottle.
Obviously, we're here doing a literary analysis of the latest Taylor Swift album. That shouldn't be a surprise.
No. Wow, what a fun moment.
Go ahead.
I feel like you're a little bit defying your own thesis about this being a work of fiction. You know, there are so many songs where if you want, you can read into all of her relationships, which the internet is wont to do, right? She famously broke up with a 6-year relationship with Joe Alwyn, the actor.
So long, London.
She briefly dated Matt Healy, who her fans were up in arms about. He's from the band 1975.
Who the hell was that guy?
Of course, she's now dating Travis Kelce, the famous football player.
When I touched down, call the amateurs and cut them from the team.
And if you want to examine her songs for clues about which boy is she writing about, they're
sure,
all over the place. It's in there.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Is this a work of fiction or is this, what do you call this?
I see what you mean. It could be a roman à clé, perhaps.
What is
you
that?
Know, I think in the French, that would be a novel with a key. That is like all the identities of the people are mapped to people in real life, and the audience for the book would sort of tacitly understand who each of those were.
Although, didn't Swift just tell us that only she holds the key to her literary world?
And she did.
Maybe to play devil's advocate to my own counter-argument, all literature draws from real life, and the blending of fact and fiction is often where the delight is.
I think so, right. That's interesting. Like, is the tattooed golden retriever of Tortured Poets Department, Matty Healy, who you mentioned from the 1975?
You smoked them 8-7 bars of chocolate. We declare Charlie Puth should be a bigger artist. I scratch your head, you fall asleep like a tattooed golden retriever.
Possibly, probably. Will I probably always think of him that way for the rest of my life, whether or not it's accurate? Yes, that is the power of fiction and a well-turned phrase, right?
Sure, right. But that's also what it is. It's like, it's just a well-turned phrase. Or maybe you don't like that line. I think this specific line has gone under the microscope on Reddit. Many are not pleased with it. But sometimes you just find the words, the songwriter, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, and that kind of is... like, yeah, this thing which I've gone through and what people might know me for and what people might imagine it to be in their own life.
I love that you're bringing up this tension because when we get to the end of our next literary category, I feel like that tension is going to boil over and the impossibility of sustaining both the persona of Taylor Swift and the actual person is going to prove untenable. But before we get there,
yeah,
let's introduce this final genre, which I'll call the period genre, right? Who doesn't love a good period piece, Charlie? You know, flowing blouses, ripped bodices, swashbuckling swords, you know, all that.
Right.
Let's go to one of these period pieces, But Daddy, I Love Him. I want to hear the chorus of this.
This feels like a updated version of her song Love Story, where she's telling the Romeo and Juliet story, yeah, and there is the rush to the dad to talk about the relationship.
Yeah. I picture this transpiring in some sort of like prairie setting, maybe even like a Mennonite community or something. Or like,
I think maybe like a Jane Austen, you know, like I feel like we have like Elizabeth Bennet, yeah, running through the fields.
Oh,
I found
good.
My Darcy.
That's good. I like that. Now, you know, her parents obviously were pretty supportive in the, at least her father. Well, we don't need to get Austenian literary analysis. But this feels like one of those secret gardens in Taylor Swift's mind, this song. You know, it's so creative. It's telling this whole story. Listening to the anthology, mm-hmm, with the eye to decoding different things, mm-hmm, you'll probably listen to this and be like, wait, what? She had a baby? She's playing with people? I think it's just all a story, you know. It's great because it's so detailed in the...
I know who this one is about. Please, come on.
Okay.
But it also doesn't matter. The part of what the song does to back up your thesis about her literary era.
Yeah.
This one really shows off her play with rhyme. I think in a lot of ways, as much as she might be colloquial in her language,
uh-huh,
on this album, there's a lot of intense, very specific rhyming that is highly poetic, and you get a taste of that on this song.
God save the most judgmental creeps who say they want what's best for me, sanctimoniously performing soliloquies I'll never see.
Sanctimoniously performing soliloquies. Woo.
Yeah, that's a great sesquipedalian turn of phrase. Right there.
A what?
Sesquipedalia, a long word, essentially. A long word that means a long word.
Okay, thank you.
And one I'm sure we'll hear on the next Taylor Swift.
Yeah, album. Right.
Sanctimoniously performing soliloquies. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because that is a very, very sort of a very self-conscious literary moment, right?
There's a lot of those. And it's worth pointing out that one of the things that she is really strong at is finding not just your obvious perfect rhymes, but she really is a slant rhymer. She loves finding alliteration. She loves twisting words to fit together in ways that are quite poetic. Sanctimoniously performing soliloquies. I don't have the literary chops to be able to say every kind of rhyme type that exists in those three words.
Yeah. Well, and then the next line, I'll never see. So there's alliteration, there's internal rhyme, there's assonance. So there's a lot going on. One more period piece on this album, I think, is the final song of the OG album, I guess, the original Tortured Poets Department, track 16, Clara Bow.
You look like Clara Bow in this light. Remarkable all your life. Did you know you'd be picked like a rose?
This is one of those moments where you immediately have to go, I gotta Google that.
Clara Bow. Right. I mean, I had a vague idea that she was a actress from the early era of American cinema. But what did you learn when you Wikipedia'd her? I think that's a verb now.
Yeah. Poets can word anything if they just verb it.
There we go.
I learned that she was one of the few actors to successfully transition from the silent era into the talkies, kind of like Taylor Swift transitioned from the CD era into the streaming era, and that Clara Bow also was the original It Girl.
Huh.
She was in a film called It, and so she was the It Girl. And of course, the It Girl is the person who captures the most media attention at any given moment for their beauty and fashion and, you know, gossip, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
As the song progresses, we encounter other It Girls through history. We hear about Stevie Nicks from Fleetwood Mac, of course, and various incredible solo efforts as well.
You look like Stevie Nicks and 75, the hair and lips crowd.
Okay, so we've got yet another It Girl, and I'm hearing now the expectations that are put on these people who are in the limelight, the expectations of performing, but also conforming to whatever those societal expectations might be.
And we're creating an expectation in this song that we're going to hear about It Girls from different eras of American history, which means when we get to the third verse, we're going to hear about one more. And who is it, Charles?
You look like Taylor Swift in this light. We're loving it. You've got edge. She never did the future's bright.
She's pulled a little trompe-l'oeil, if you will, if we need to use some other terms from art history and literary analysis. The trick of the eye in French.
Yeah.
She is singing about herself, and in a certain way you forget that she is singing a song because of this Ouroboros that she has made of singing about Taylor Swift as Taylor Swift.
That's the last thing we hear on the original 16-track album, Tortured Poets Department. It's a kind of bold and heady move, I think, that I imagine will rub some people the wrong way to reference yourself like this in a song. Who does that? What is that about?
The most famous person on the planet. I mean, I think you have to be self-aware.
You do, but I feel like it crosses a certain kind of line to go that far in terms of self-recognition.
Well, to this question of literary fiction versus maybe more memoir.
Yeah.
Evoking herself, I think, makes us question that even more.
I agree.
Right? Like, if she is writing about Taylor Swift, is she narrativizing her own life, or is she creating the legend of Taylor Swift? Is she playing into the larger fan narrative?
That question is something I want to explore after a quick break, Charlie, with maybe one final genre that you won't encounter anywhere else. You won't find on a bookshelf in, you know, City Lights or something, but you will find on this album, it's the genre of Taylor Swift.
Ooh.
When we return.
Ah. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Charlie, is it too bold to say that Taylor Swift is a genre unto herself at this point?
Not at all. I think that's what makes her the most famous person on the planet. If she was making pop songs that sounded like anyone else's, then she would just slot right into the top 40, and she's not that person. She makes a sound, which is Taylor Swift. She writes Taylor Swift songs.
And as the brilliant Ann Powers pointed out in her review of this anthology for NPR, even the release of this album suggests this literary genre. Taylor Swift created this art installation, I guess, with Spotify randomly at the Grove Mall here in Los Angeles that was a library.
Huh.
And all the books in the library were credited to Taylor Swift.
She could have done it at the Glendale Galleria. I'm just saying.
now we're talking. Love. Shouts out to Americana brand memes. Got to park at the Galleria and walk to the Americana. Don't park at the Americana, people.
This is getting way too LA. All right.
So I think there is this compelling idea that at this point, how many albums in, how many hundreds of songs in, this is a body of work that exists unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I think this album is more than any other, perhaps, is made for the people who are already steeped in that genre.
Yeah.
The fans, certainly, but also just the people who have been along for this ride and had these sounds in their ears and had these lyrical references ready to go. How could we unpack this album as a meta commentary on the Taylor Swift genre?
One thing that comes to mind,
yeah,
is that I feel like we were some of the first to see that across all of her eras, so-called, that there is a consistent Taylor Swift sound. She has a certain...
There's some dirt on your shoulder. Will you just brush it off for me real quick?
Oh, there we go. Yeah, thank you.
There we go. Okay, yeah.
We called out the idea of the T-drop, the special little melody that sometimes goes...
Da-da-da.
And there's a variation.
Da-da-da.
She loves this, and it's all over her work.
You belong with me,
right? We found this in our second episode ever of Switched on Pop. It's like, wow, this little thing that she does is everywhere. She does the T-drop all over Tortured Poets.
Yeah,
you can hear it on the title track, Tortured Poets.
Never say cool.
It's on Down Bad. Understand it.
And it's okay. I hear it.
It's on But Daddy, I Love Him.
You ain't gotta pray for me.
Pray for me.
Wow.
It's on So Long London.
Think I hide in me.
It's on LOML, Love of My Life, 120.
Nick of Time.
So every time you hear the T drop, you know, oh, that's a Taylor Swiftism.
Yes.
But it's not the only thing that she does. She, in many ways, is a folk singer. I think I think her songs at their core are country songs or folk songs. They are Taylor and her guitar writing simple words and melodies. And there are many other ways in which she connects the web of her music through mining her old material and putting them in new contexts. For example, my wife says that the song Delicate is the Rosetta Stone of all Taylor Swift songs. And you can hear hints of Delicate on Tortured Poets. Crazy, because I want you.
That's very similar. I was wondering, this is a little an insider Switch on Pop baseball here. Your aforementioned wife is currently visiting us here in Los Angeles.
That's true.
And she was showing me all the texts. I'm outing you. She was showing me all the texts where you're pumping her for information about Taylor Swift.
She has a deep Taylor Swift brain. Like, I hear the melody, but I don't know the words, and she's able to connect them all together.
Well, I was going in this recording, I was like, now I have the deep background here, and I'll know if Charlie is going to give her credit or steal these insights for his own. And I'm impressed that and proud that you were very open about, you know, giving credit where it's due. Okay, so now onward.
So she unlocks Delicate as this Rosetta Stone song, and you can hear more Delicate isms on the song Down Bad.
Now I'm down bad, crying at the gym. Everything comes out, teenage petulance. Fuck it if I can't have him. I might just die, it would make no difference.
Not bad, wow. Right? Yeah, so yeah. We have a similar cadence, similar sort of mostly single note melody.
Huh.
Down Bad also borrows, I think, a bit from Antihero. Check out the bridge.
I loved your hostile takeovers, encounters closer and closer, all your indecent exposures. How I should not be left to my own devices. They come with prices and vices. I end up in crisis.
Similar rhyme schemes, which are unusual creative rhyme schemes and similar cadences. All right, how about this very surprising reference, which bridges genres? Let's listen to her song, Who's Afraid of Little Old Me?
So I leap from the gallows and I levitate down your street. Crash the party like a record scratch as I scream.
Am I crazy to hear her pop country song, You Belong With Me, in those lines?
I'm in my room, it's a typical Tuesday night. I'm listening to the kind of music she doesn't like, and she'll never know your story like I do.
Big tempo shift, totally different genre. You hear what I'm hearing? Do you need to play it again?
I need to hear it one more time.
So I leap from the gallows and I levitate down your street. Crash the party like da, a da, 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 da,
it's a typical Tuesday. Yeah. Okay, there's something there.
Seems kind of a melodic rhythm.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a full eclipse, but it's a partial eclipse.
It's partial eclipse. Okay, great.
I love hearing all of these, Charlie, especially because I feel like there was a couple albums where we didn't encounter a lot of T-drops, and it's good to hear them back in full force. And I feel like there's also a similar analogy here to what we were talking about in the first half of the episode with the literary references. Mm. Are these intentional? Are they unconscious? Mm-hmm. Are they planned? Are they intuitive? Like, we might not know, and it might not matter. These are part of her musical building blocks, her tapestry,
right?
The things that make her songs hers.
Yeah, you know, and I feel like you could say, oh, she's just recycling material, this is unoriginal, give me more unique melodies. But to stick with the literary metaphor, oftentimes you go to a writer because you love how they weave words, the kind of sentence construction, the way that they create metaphor. And so with Taylor Swift, I actually really enjoy that there is such a strong sonic identity that make her songs so obviously Taylor Swift songs, because I know I am safely in her world and can go and travel through all of these different genres with her and still be safely in the world of Taylor Swift.
Charlie, this is a sprawling record, 31 tracks. We've talked about a fraction of them.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is there anything I missed in my literary breakdown?
I feel like there is another genre of the epic poem.
Oh, okay.
Right. So there are a handful of songs which reference essential works of the past.
Yeah.
Like, well, you could go with the biggest book of all. She has a song called The Prophecy, in which she evokes the Garden of Eden and Eve, going back to the Bible.
And it was written, I got cursed like Eve got bitten. Oh, was it punishment?
She compares herself to Eve. She compares herself to the Trojan prophet Cassandra, who who was
cast out, right? Exiled for predicting the end of the defeat of Troy. Yeah,
exactly.
So they killed Cassandra first because she feared the worst and tried to tell it sound.
Correction, they didn't exile her. They killed her.
Yeah. So, oops. You could look at the poem, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, which is about the albatross, a bird which has cursed the crew of a ship. And she uses the same metaphor in her song, The Albatross. finally, not quite an epic poem, but certainly an important work in children's literature, Peter Pan. She tells the story of Peter Pan, who is supposed to reconnect with Wendy.
You said you were gonna grow up, then you were gonna come find me. Said you were gonna grow up, then you were gonna come find me. Said you were gonna grow up, then you were gonna come find me. Words from the mouths of babes, promises, oceans deep.
We've heard about Peter Pan and Wendy before in her song Cardigan, and not only is she bringing characters in from the world of poetry and children's stories and the Bible and all these different poetic places, but she's also structuring her songs a bit more poetically. Oftentimes, the final chorus introduces entirely new words. There are multiple songs on this album with a third verse, which is frankly anathema in pop music. Third verse, you've lost my attention. But she wants to take us through these narratives, and she's going to trust that her fandom is going to follow her all the way through multiple dozen songs with extra sections that are as poetic as possible.
Thank you for introducing this epic poetry genre to exist alongside the pulp and the diaries and the period pieces.
And the Taylor Swift.
And the Taylor Swift of it all. You know, coming out of this discussion, I find myself asking a larger question about this album and Swift's career. If we hear Tortured Poets Department as an exploration of these heady literary genres merging one's persona with one's truth, creating a web, intentionally or not, of musical and lyrical references to one's own body of work, do we see Swift as maybe retreating from a mode of songwriting that tries to reach as many people as possible, that tries to create these universal, world-beating smash hits like, I don't know, Shake It Off, for instance?
Absolutely. She doesn't need to shake it off anymore. She has the biggest audience on the planet, and they're going to follow her wherever she goes, and all of us are going to get caught in the wake no matter what. And so she just gets to make Taylor Swift music now. She gets to do whatever she wants.
Well, Charlie, my muse, my Greek goddess, my romantic poet, you are all that and more to me. My hard-boiled detective.
Nate, my Joe, my Maddie, my Travis.
What a treat to race through the shelves of this literary library with you. And let's say we'll close the book, but we'll dog-ear a few pages to come back to, because I don't think this story is over.
Oh, I like that. Oh, you did it. You did it. Fish on Pop is produced by Rihanna Cruz. This week we're edited by Jolie Myers, engineered by Brandon McFarland, illustrations by Iris Gottlieb, community management by Abby Barr. Nishat Kharoa is our executive producer. We're a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network and a production of Vulture, which is part of New York Magazine. You can subscribe to New York Magazine at nymag.com/pod.
Find us on social media at Switched on Pop and tell us everything you're hearing in TDP. No, TPD. I got it.
TTDP.
TTPD.
It's like the Tallahassee Technical Police Department.
I'm going to ignore that. And go to our website, switchonpop.com, to find any episode. And put your email into our newsletter sign-up box, where you will be treated to a scant email per week at the most, full of musicological insights and tracks you should be checking out. It's a fun read.
We'll be back again next Tuesday. Until then, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Unless you stick around for the Easter eggs.
Do, 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 do. I like that. Very swift of you, Charles.
Nate, there are some things that we did not get to discuss on this episode, which we have to. I'm sorry.
Oh, Charlie just leaned in like he was like, I'm going to sell you a timeshare. Okay, what's going on?
First of all, I have one major gripe with this album.
Uh-oh.
I didn't want to make the Beyoncé comparison. I don't think it's appropriate. The albums have nothing in common with each other, but there's a lot of, you know, dialogue about their commercial expectations and awards, et cetera, et cetera. Both Beyoncé and Taylor have something in common, and it's not that Post Malone is featured on Cowboy Carter and the Tortured Poets Department. It's the fact that neither of them can say the word sandcastles.
Wait, what? Well, I know your beef with Beyoncé's Sandcastles.
We built sandcastles.
Lemonade is a perfect album, save for the moment that she sings Sandcastles. And you know who also sings Sandcastles?
Uh-oh.
Taylor Swift on My Boy Only Breaks His Favorite Toys.
I'm queen of sandcastles he destroyed.
Mother Trucker, can't take it.
Sandcastles.
No, sandcastles. I'm sorry. It's not working for me.
Usually Swift is very proper with her prosody, but that is a rare misfire.
It's a lapse of judgment. I'm sorry.